Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation First Quarter 2016 Results Release Conference Call and Webcast. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Wednesday, April 27, 2016, at 10:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Ms. Flora Wood, Director of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for dialing in. I know a lot of issuers are reporting today. You'll see our presentation on our website, and the forward-looking statement is slide two of the presentation. The forward-looking statements apply to the content of the presentation and anything we say in the Q&A. With me today, I have David Pathe, CEO, and Dean Chambers, CFO. And with that, I'll turn over to David.
All right. Thank you, Flora, and thanks once again, everybody, for joining us this morning. Steve Wood is out of town this week, so for this quarter, Dean and I are going to cover things off between us. Steve would normally start touching on safety, so I'm going to do that this time. We had a pretty good quarter overall, lower reportable incidents compared to the same quarter last year, and some of the initiatives we've had in safety in the last 12 months were being much more proactive on leading indicator tracking, and we've had much higher management safety interactions in the field, and we're hoping that's a harbinger of future strong performance. On safety specifically, you will have seen as well in our press release that we're now about 95% complete on our acid plant construction in Cuba, and that project has gone very well from a safety perspective as well as a construction perspective. We're now 95% complete and in quite a tight space with a lot going on. We've had over 1 million exposure hours, and we've only had 3 lost-time incidents on that project, and so we're quite pleased with the way that has gone as well. Moving on to the quarter then, really, once again, it's a story of currency and commodity prices, so I've highlighted that a bit on the first slide here. Nickel for the quarter was hitting lows that we haven't seen since 2002, 2003. We hit a low of $3.50 during the month, which puts the vast majority of nickel production in the world underwater. We have seen nickel pick up off the bottom of that in the last few weeks. We're now 15%-20% off of those lows and potentially some reasons for some optimism there, and we'll talk about nickel markets in a few minutes. Oil, obviously, people would follow closely, and that has picked up more significantly off of its lows, but one of the stories of the quarter for us is fuel oil number six, which you'll know is the market reference price that we use for pricing our oil in Cuba. That hasn't thus far kept pace with WTI. We'll look over the page here. You'll see that fuel oil number six about over a year ago was actually trading pretty close to WTI, but quite a spread has now opened up between WTI and GCF6 that started in the fourth quarter and has continued to widen in the first quarter of this year. We're now trading at sort of 60%-65% to WTI. We historically get 70%-75% of the GCF6 pricing for our Cuban oil, and that ratio hasn't changed, but that spread that has opened up between fuel oil number six and WTI is resulting in lower realized pricing for us at the moment. The U.S.-Canadian dollar exchange rate is a story this quarter as well, and Dean will touch on a bit more about that in his comments on the impact of that. Interesting quarter this time, though, in that the Canadian dollar is weaker compared to where it was a year ago, but stronger relative to where it was last quarter, so it has some effects one way or the other depending on what quarter you're comparing against. Moving on to our nickel production then, nickel production overall was down about 4% from Q1 2015. In Moa, production was off marginally from the same quarter last year. Heavy rainfall at the mine faces in Moa, particularly some of the higher-grade mine faces, impacted our ability to get some of the higher-grade ore, and that flowed through to lower mixed sulfide production. We were able to supplement some of the lower mixed sulfide with third-party feed at the refinery, but the third-party feed we were able to acquire was more cobalt-rich than nickel-rich, and so you see the modest drop in nickel production while cobalt production hung in reasonably well. Embatavi's production was down a couple hundred tons from Q1 last year, and frankly a few hundred tons short of our plan for this year. In our press release, we referred to a number of unrelated reliability issues. For example, we had a number of valves and pipeliners and components that failed a little ahead of their original design life, which was meant to be around 3 years. So they would have been up for replacement otherwise sometime later this year. Those have now largely been replaced, and the replacement has migrated to other materials and stainless steel rather than rubber lining, for example. But we've been able to do that without really changing our production or capital guidance for the full year. We do have a maintenance shutdown coming up in late August, and at that time we'll be making some additional modifications to address some of the issues we've had with reliability. More broadly, we continue to revise our preventative maintenance processes as part of our plan to improve equipment availability, increase production, and lower costs. You would have seen over the quarter we talked about the advanced cargo declaration and an attempt to put in a container fee at the port. That has all wrapped up now. It didn't have any significant impact on production. It did have some impact on the timing of shipments and some marginal impact on pricing as a result. But that has now gone away with our protections under the Malagasy mining law upheld. And frankly, a few weeks after they recognized that we were unaffected due to the LGIM, the advanced cargo declaration was scrapped in its entirety. So we carried on as we were before that issue rose up. We'll take a look at net direct cash costs in the next couple of slides, but overall it was a good quarter for NDCC. It was down significantly from the first quarter a year ago, just over a dollar a pound at Moa and about $1.30 at Embatavi. Before we do that, nickel markets more generally, despite roughly 60% of nickel production being underwater on a cash margin basis, we've still really only seen some minor supply-side responses. I've seen some minor operations shut down. Most of the cuts thus far have been in nickel pig iron production. General consensus seems to be that about 125,000 tons of nickel pig iron production came off in 2015, with people expecting another 70 or so thousand tons this year. On the demand side, we are seeing some general signs in the last few weeks of the market potentially coming in more into balance after a few years of surpluses. The trend towards increased demand from China that we saw towards the end of last year has continued and strengthened into the first quarter of this year. We ourselves have very little material available at this point in time, and we've been getting some calls from buyers that we haven't heard from in quite some time. In fact, we're at the point now where we've had to turn some potential customers away because we simply don't have material available for them, and that's something we haven't seen in quite some time. As a consequence of that, we are seeing some signs that the discounts to LME pricing are shrinking, and in some cases, premium are emerging against LME pricing, and that kind of environment has generally in the past been positive for the prospect of nickel prices going forward. Cobalt, after falling in late 2015, has stabilized, and the outlook there is relatively stable. Nickel and copper supply cuts often have an immediate impact on cobalt supply, as much of the cobalt production in the world is really byproduct driven, and we'll see how much of that impacts cobalt supply through the course of 2015. Over on page six, you've seen this slide before. This shows our net direct cash cost relative to the performance of the 50th percentile. You can take from that page that the 50th percentile of nickel production in the world is still above the spot price today, so more than half the world's production is underwater on a cash margin basis still. You did see our MOA cost uptick a bit from the 290 that we had in the fourth quarter last year, which was a bit of an aberration based on some maintenance timing and a large fertilizer credit. But over the course of this year, we do expect MOA to still benefit from normal seasonality in fertilizer sales with higher credits in Q2 and Q4. And our acid plant operation, which you saw in the press release, is going well. Should be starting to contribute acid in the third year. And with spot commodity prices where they are, we still think that's worth up to about 50 cents a pound for us. And Batavi's NDCC in the quarter was about 10% higher in the fourth quarter. On production that was about 10% lower due to the downtime that we just spoke about. With better production this quarter at Embatavi, we should be able to get net direct cash costs back closer to the $4 mark. Just over the page to finish off the cash costs, there you see our two operations plotted against the most recent Wood Mackenzie cost curve, both firmly in that that second quartile and continuing to work those down towards the bottom quartile. Before I move on to just talk briefly about power and oil, before turning it over to Dean on some more specific finance and accounting matters, I just wanted to take a minute and talk about, pick up on our conversation at Q4 and where we are in Batabi funding. As we discussed on our year-end call, we have ceased funding our share of cash calls to the projects at this point in time, and the achievement of financial completion at the end of the third quarter last year has made that possible. This relates to our 40 for 12 issue, where we're expected to fund 40% of the cash calls, but due to the 70% cash sweep of our future distributions from the project to the non-recourse partner loans, we would really only have an effective 12% economic interest in the project for the foreseeable future, and that creates a significant disincentive for us from a capital allocation perspective to contribute to the project. Sumitomo and Corez have now provided $51 million U.S. in funding to Mbatabi so far, pursuant to cash calls of $85 million in 2016. That $34 million difference is the amount that we have not funded. Dean will speak to the accounting for that. It doesn't get added to the partner loan total, but it is non-recourse to Sheraton, only funded from our future distributions from the project unless we choose to do otherwise. A project debt payment on the original $2.1 billion U.S. Financing is due on June 15th, and negotiations continue with the lenders on the amortization schedule, again made possible by the achievement of financial completion and the falling away of the parental guarantees. Not much in the way of progress to report to you on that, frankly. There have been a couple meetings in London with the sponsors and the lenders over the last couple months. I expect, frankly, that the June 15th deadline will begin to insert some greater urgency into those conversations, since that's the payment that the project alone is not funded to be able to make at this point in time, and we'll update on you as we get closer to that date and have some more meaningful news for you. The partner side and our 40 for 12 issue, I mean, we are still operating the project and everybody is still working structurally towards that. The focus, frankly, more recently has been on the Mbatabi lender discussions rather than the intra-partner discussions. And I suspect that will continue as we get closer to some sort of resolution with the lenders. Turning to oil and gas and power, in the oil business, as expected, oil production declined year over year, but the 52% drop in fuel oil number 6 prices meant we received a higher number of cost recovery barrels, which kept our net working interest figure relatively flat. We talked about the spread between WTI and GCF6 and how we saw that widen beyond anything we saw last year, and that obviously hurt our realized prices. Unit operating costs, on the other hand, remain low even with the drop in production. A bit of an anomaly there in that it was a relatively low expenditure quarter from a workover perspective. We will see that pick up a bit over the next few quarters, with unit operating costs probably coming more in line with what we saw in Q4 last year, a buck or two higher. Power had a good quarter, slightly higher production and 32% higher revenue. That's driven in part by the weaker Canadian dollar against the U.S. dollar, and also there's some construction revenue there from the pipeline we're building to add in some incremental gas supply to the operation. Power, adjusted EBITDA is up from the same quarter a year ago. Cash from operations and free cash flow are both about $20 million lower. The main difference being the interest in principal received on the CSA, which was the construction financing loan from Q1 last year. We do expect to see some cash flow from interest and principal repayment this year. I think we're expecting about $34 million overall. Just to finish up, for me anyway, one change to our guidance this quarter, and that's our capital spending in the oil business. We reduced that by $9 million U.S. That relates to the capital for the second of the two wells that we were planning to drill on Block 10 this year. Given the timing of permitting, the time to drill the well, and the time that we want to assess the results of the first well before starting drilling on the second, we now expect the bulk of the spending on that second well to be in early 2017
hence the revision to our 2016 capital spending guidance there. Before we come then and take your questions, Dean's going to touch on a few things from a finance and accounting perspective, and then we'll come back and take your questions. Dean?
Thanks, David, and good morning. I have five slides today covering some new accounting treatment that arose this quarter, the impact of foreign exchange on our results, cash flow and liquidity, and some changes to our bank credit facilities. As David has described, Sherritt is not funding Embattavi cash calls due to the structure of the Embattavi partner loans, which effectively reduces our 40% equity interest to a 12% economic interest. In the first quarter, Sherritt's share of the unfunded cash calls was U.S. $34 million. Essentially, Sherritt owes the Embattavi joint venture this amount, plus accrued interest at LIBOR plus 3%. Our share of future distributions may be used to repay this liability, or it may be set off against other amounts owed to Sherritt. Of course, we could elect to pay this amount at any time. So, this underfunding gives rise to the recognition of a new liability. A corresponding asset is also recognized relating to the right to receive future distributions from Embattavi. This is a different situation than the subordinated loan receivable, because the subordinated debt reflects financing that has been provided to the Embattavi joint venture. Slide 10 gives you a snapshot from notes 14 and 17 from our quarterly financial statements. In Canadian dollars, the unfunded amount is approximately $44 million. The asset is recorded as an other financial asset in the advances, loans receivable, and other financial assets line on our balance sheet. The liability is contained in the other financial liabilities line, also on our balance sheet. Although this liability shows as a separate item, it is similar to the Embattavi additional partner loans in the sense that if it's not repaid by distributions from Embattavi, the only recourse is to our share in the joint venture. On another note, on our year-end call, we discussed in depth the impairment of Embattavi's assets. One impact of the reduced carrying value of Embattavi's property, plant, and equipment is reduced depreciation going forward, and this is the first quarter where we can see that impact. This quarter, Embattavi depreciation and amortization on a 100% basis was 92.5 million Canadian dollars compared to approximately $133 million in the fourth quarter. Now I'll turn to our usual introductory slide, slide 11, showing our adjusted net loss versus consensus. This was a relatively quiet quarter with few adjustments, but foreign exchange always has an impact. We spent some time on foreign exchange on last quarter's call when we reviewed our sensitivity table. As Dave mentioned, this is somewhat of an unusual quarter in that the Canadian dollar was weaker this quarter compared to Q1 of 2015, but strengthened significantly during the quarter compared to year-end. Like most mining companies that report in Canadian dollars, operating earnings are generally positively impacted by a weaker Canadian dollar. However, in a period of operating losses, as we experienced this quarter, where U.S. dollar expenses exceed revenues, the impact of a weaker Canadian dollar this quarter compared to last year had a negative impact on operating earnings compared to the first quarter of 2015. In addition, our U.S.-based financial liabilities exceed our U.S. dollar-based financial assets. With the strengthening of the Canadian dollar during the quarter, this resulted in the unrealized translation gain of $76 million impacting our earnings. Finance expense, which in the past four quarters has generally increased with additional unrealized foreign exchange losses, this quarter is mitigated by this unrealized foreign exchange gain, turning the expense into income of $50.6 million. We have updated our sensitivity table in the MD&A, where we indicate that the strengthening of the Canadian dollar relative to the U.S. dollar of 5 cents has a positive impact on net earnings of approximately $51 million in the first quarter. Based on the actual amount the Canadian dollar strengthened during the quarter, We estimate that it had an approximately $10 million positive impact on operating earnings because of operating losses during this quarter, in addition to the translation gain we just discussed. Our reported adjusted net loss of 43 cents compares to analyst consensus of negative 35 cents, and Dave has covered the main drivers, being Embatavi's lower production and the lower average realized price in oil. Turning now to slide 12, which shows the combined adjusted operating cash flow this quarter compared to the fourth quarter. On this basis, overall operating cash flow declined by approximately $7 million compared to last quarter. Despite the drop in average realized price and the drop in production, Embatavi has a higher adjusted operating cash flow. The main difference is the interest payment on the senior project debt that was paid in December last year. The MOA joint venture and oil and gas had lower adjusted operating cash flow with lower revenue from the commodity price impact. The magnitude of the change at MOA relates to seasonal higher cash flow with higher fertilizer sales that occurred in Q4. We typically see higher fertilizer sales again in the second quarter, although we have experienced higher sales in the first quarter compared to the same period last year due to warmer weather in Western Canada. In power, there was no interest received on the CSA loan, largely due to capital spending. In this quarter, we had lower interest payments on our debentures, with $10 million being paid, compared to $20 million typically paid in the second quarter and the fourth quarter. Slide 13 shows the change in cash during the quarter. We had a small working capital change of roughly $4 million. Overdue oil and gas receivables increased to U.S. $62 million by the end of March, compared to U.S. $50 million at year-end. QPET is generally paying in accordance to an agreed payment plan forecasted to return these receivables to current by the end of the year, but the payment schedule is weighted towards the latter part of this year. The most significant change in our cash balance is the repayment of $45 million of debt, which I will discuss in more detail on the next slide. Ignoring the repayment of debt, our cash balance declined by approximately $20 million during the quarter. During our year-end call, I reviewed the covenants that existed in all of our debt facilities. At that time, we disclosed that we had received waivers for a breach of a financial debt to equity covenant, and that we would be working with our lenders to amend the terms of these facilities to deal with this low commodity price environment and avoid future potential breaches and the need for waivers. Slide 14 describes the results of these discussions. With respect to the $115 million revolving term credit facility, which is secured by receivables and inventory, we have negotiated the following updated covenants. There is a net financial debt to EBITDA covenant of 3.75 to 1 at March 31st, which is the same as the previous covenant. However, as you can see, this ratio increases each quarter up to 4.25 to 1 at the end of the third quarter. All of these covenants are calculated on a moving four-quarter basis, so this reflects the fact that if commodity prices remain at current levels, the calculation will include more low EBITDA quarters while dropping higher EBITDA quarters from the prior year. In addition, there is a requirement to maintain cash at greater than 50% of the lower of the borrowing base or the facility amount if this ratio is greater than 3.75. There's a net financial debt to equity covenant of 0.55 to 1. 0.55 is unchanged, but the calculation has changed from financial debt to net financial debt, including the benefit of cash balances. And the EBITDA to interest covenant is changed from 3 to 1 to 1.75 to 1. I will remind you that these covenants have their own calculations defined in the agreements and cannot be directly calculated from our financial statements. But based on our current forecasts, these covenants are not expected to be breached prior to the maturity of the facility in November. As a result of the amended covenant package, interest rates on this facility have increased by 25 basis points. And during the quarter, we repaid $10 million on this facility due to a decline in the borrowing base simply related to declining nickel prices. Now, with respect to the $35 million line of credit, which was unsecured, we were unable to negotiate new terms acceptable to Sherritt, so the facility has been repaid and has been terminated. This concludes our formal remarks, so I will turn the call back to Ron to open the line for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll now take the first question from the line of Orest Wowkodaw with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if you could give a little bit more color on what your expectations may be for the resolution of, I guess, this ownership and funding impasse at Envatome. And, I mean, at some point, how long do you think the partners will continue to fund your share if you elect not to contribute? Thank you.
Hi, Orest. It's Dave. I'll comment a bit, and then Dean's been involved in negotiations. If he has anything to add, I'll ask him as well. It's difficult to say exactly what the outcome will be until we've got to something. Generally, I expect that we will get to some sort of arrangement that will see several principal deferrals on the Envatome project financing. That's certainly the nature of what's being discussed right now. And that will alleviate a big part of the cash requirements to Envatome for the next few quarters, as really the last couple of years. The biggest demand for cash from the partners has been making those principal and interest repayments on the senior financing. In terms of our partners, their commitment to the project remains strong. And certainly in the discussions we've had with them in the last few months and with us and them and the lenders, their commitment to the project seems intent on seeing it through to cash neutrality and ultimately profitability. Obviously there's no obligation on them to do that, but they do have a significant exposure to the project. And, the converse of our 40 for 12 issue is if we were funding, they do get 88% of the cash flow, and to the extent that they fund it in circumstances where we don't, they will get 100% of the cash flow until they recoup any incremental spending that they put in that we don't match. So my expectation at this point is that they will continue to fund through to what needs to see the project be able to stand on its own, assuming that some reasonable accommodation can be reached with the Envatome lenders.
Okay, so it sounds like it could still take a couple of months to resolve at least. And then a question for Dean. I saw obviously you put some new financial leverage covenants into your credit facility. Can you explain kind of what's included in both the EBITDA and the debt part of the calculation? Like, are the partner loans included in the debt? Are you looking at kind of an adjusted EBITDA, including sort of the contributions from Envatome and MOA? Sort of wondering how to piece that together.
Yeah, we could probably spend some time offline going into a lot more detail, but things like the partner loans are not included, but things like letters of credit are. I think with respect to EBITDA, sometimes it gets to look at actually cash flow as opposed to in some cases. So there are a lot of different adjustments depending on the actual calculation. I'd be happy to spend a bit more time offline, but I think that's one of the bigger changes is that the partner loans are not included in the debt.
Okay, so could you give us what your, say, net debt to EBITDA was for the purpose of this calculation, say, as of the end of the first quarter?
I don't have the number with me, but obviously we were in compliance with the covenant.
Can you give us a sense of how close you were to that threshold in terms of breathing room? Or?
I actually don't know the exact number at this moment. I know that it was not particularly was not a concern. That's all I really know at this moment. But I could talk to our Treasury guys and get a more precise answer for you.
Okay. I'll leave it there. I guess we'll take it offline. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button function is turned off while your signal to reach our equipment. Well, I'll take our next question from the line of Greg Burns with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, David. A couple of questions. Ambatovi has made a cash call for $85 million, of which only $51 million was funded. What happens with the $34 million they're missing? Does Ambatovi have a problem in terms of undercapitalizing the business? Are they running out of cash at the Ambatovi level, or is this all just funding for the debt repayment that's coming up in June?
Well, to date, the cash calls have been basically appropriately sized so that so 60% of them gives the project the cash it needs to carry on to operate. The future amount of cash that the project needs will depend on where nickel prices go and how production performs. $50-odd million that Correz and Sumitomo have put in out of that 85 has been what the project was needed to carry on so far this year, and that will see us through probably the next month or two here, just depending on how the world unfolds. There isn't funding going into the project at this point in time, anticipating the project having the cash to make the June principal repayment.
Okay. So, Dean, you said that this revolving credit, the $115 million facility, has been obviously amended, but it matures in November. What do you think happens then?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's important is the fact that it is secured and has good security, and that's obviously one of the main differences between it and the unsecured line of credit that we had. I would fully anticipate that we would negotiate and extend the term of that facility at maturity, and obviously we would be looking at what covenants make sense at that time.
Okay, fair enough.
It is an annual facility, Greg. We just renewed it last November. It's renewed every November for as long as I've been here.
Okay, good. Thanks.
It appears there are no further questions at this time. Ms. Wood, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Ron, and I want to thank everybody for dialing in. Just a reminder to those of you who are in Toronto or near Toronto, we do have our AGM coming up May 10th and hope to see you there. And for everyone else, we'll look forward to talking to you in the Q2 results. Thanks.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.